So this morning, first I like to look a little again at the four qualities, because somebody asked me about a precision about them. So the four qualities we can cultivate, I mentioned already, are loving kindness, which in the ancient language is called metta. Then the second one is compassion, which it's called karuna. Then you have what we did yesterday, which is appreciative joy, altruistic joy, which is mudita. And then you have the last one, which is equanimity, and which is called upekkha. And so the person left a note asking about the different similarity between metta and karuna, and also what were the phrases for karuna, for compassion. So first, to see that actually these four have slightly, it's kind of just a slight different orientation. And personally, I also feel they are connected with different feeling tones. So when we orient toward these qualities, then different feeling tones are going to come up. So for example, metta, loving kindness, and this is really well-wishing. Wishing well for yourself, wishing well for others, is actually cultivating a non-threatening attitude. And as I said before, it's an antidote to fear. In a way, it's kind of looking at the world in a benign way. Then the next one, karuna, is compassion. And so loving kindness is very connected to pleasant feeling tone, to feeling a little lighter, to feeling connected to others. And compassion, here it's connected actually to unpleasant feeling tone. And so the person was asking for the phrases for karuna, for compassion would be, may I be free from pain, may I be free from danger, may I be free from sorrow, may I be free from suffering. May you be free from danger, may you be free from sorrow, may you be free from pain, may you be free from suffering. But personally, generally, I don't bring this teaching as a practice on a silent retreat. Because I feel, because the karuna is very much about being with suffering, and because I feel that we have difficulty with unpleasant feeling tone. Because when we come close to unpleasant feeling tone, we have a very quick tendency to associate and also to generalize and also to amplify. And that's why I'm not so sure that it's so helpful, and it can be difficult as you sit silently in retreat and through a whole day you're trying to be in contact with unpleasant feeling tone in a way. I think that might not be the best place to do that. And that's why generally I would not recommend it, but if one is used to do that, that is fine. Then there is also what you might know as a shortcut. I mean, it's not presented that way, but often it's presented as general metta meditation. And often what happens with those phrases, or what I would call the shortcut metta meditation, is that different things are included. So in a way, although it's called metta, loving kindness meditation, actually the phrases you might have heard are, may you be happy, may you be at peace, may you be free from suffering. And actually within those three, you have the three different things. The first one, may you be happy, that's metta, that's karuna. May you be at peace, actually, it's a little bit like equanimity, so more connected to that. And then may you be free from suffering, that's connected to karuna, to compassion. So sometimes there is like a little mix-up. You think there is a metta, but it's a metta shortcut where actually you have different things together. So personally, in terms of karuna, of compassion, I think it makes more sense to cultivate compassion in daily life. So when there is suffering, myself, others, then in a way, how can I creatively engage with that? And then the other qualities, like if we cultivate loving kindness, if we cultivate mudita, which is again about pleasant feeling tone, if we cultivate equanimity, which is about neutral feeling tone, then I think that, like if we cultivate that on a retreat in silence, that is going to help us to have the tool so that in daily life, we can be compassionate, we can be close to suffering. Because I think what is difficult with compassion is that compassion is about being with suffering. And being with suffering, ours and others, is painful, is sad. And so it's going to impact us in often quite a powerful way. And so in order not to be overwhelmed by suffering, then in a way we need to balance this out with the loving kindness, with the rejoicing, with the equanimity, and then to the compassion, we can bring creative wisdom so that we're not overwhelmed. So that's what I wanted to say, a few words about Karuna and what it means. So again, today is the last full day of the retreat, and so you can continue with whatever practice you're comfortable with. You can also explore different aspects of the practice. But I thought one practice you might not be so familiar with, and personally which I find quite useful and quite complementary to what we've done up to now, is what is called as a questioning meditation. And it's what I did when I practiced for 10 years as a nun in Korea. And so, personally, I see this practice of questioning, although it seems very different, personally, I would see it as, in a way, an indirect way to cultivate mindfulness, indirect way to cultivate compassion, loving kindness, equanimity. And as I was pointing out before, you can cultivate something directly or you can cultivate something indirectly. And I don't think one is better than the other, but it's what works for me, what resonates, what also we can do. And so in terms of this practice of questioning, it's a very simple practice. But again, it combined together what I mentioned at the beginning of the retreat, the anchoring and the questioning. Because in a way, we have to see that there are many ways to practice, in the same way that there are many ways to just be aware of the breath. You go to see different teachers, and they might say different things about being aware of the breath, how to do it, what is helpful or not. And so in the same way, you have many different ways to practice. And that's why I think what is more important is not so much the specific way of practice, but actually the fact that in that practice, you can cultivate together, to some degree, anchoring and questioning, looking deeply, exploring. So in the practice I was trained in, which was just to ask a question. What is this? So at one level, it's very simple. You just sit there and you just ask, what is this? But at one level, it is difficult because actually this questioning practice is not about finding answers. This is very important. That actually the question, what is this? Is just an anchor. Is actually what we try to do with this practice is to cultivate a sensation of questioning so that the whole body and mind becomes a question. And that is, again, to you have the great faith, the great courage, and then you have the great questioning, and all balance each other. So it doesn't mean, this is what we have to be very careful with this questioning practice, is that it is not psychological questioning, looking at the history of our life or whatever. It is not a philosophical questioning about the meaning of life. That's not what it is about. But it's just a method. It's an interesting method where you anchor by coming back again and again to the question, what is this? And at the same time, you don't know the answer. You're not looking for the answer, but you use a method to open to the whole moment without grasping, defining anything within it. Because generally we ask, what is that? And we want the answer. When here it's actually helping us to be more in tune, more kind of, in a way, nearly you could say friendly with impermanence, with conditionality, with uncertainty. So it's really about, I would say, cultivation of flexibility, cultivation of openness. So in terms of the practice itself, so you ask a question silently inside yourself, what is this? And that's the anchor. And what is interesting, in the same way I presented the other anchor, when you come back to the question, you come back to the whole moment. So in a way, by coming back to the question, we come back to mindfulness. It's the same. It has the same effect. And so in a way, they say the question is like a stick in the ground to which you have a rope which is attached to the goat. And so the goat can move, again, like the anchor of the boat. But it cannot go too far. It cannot go and eat your flowers or eat your vegetables because it can only go so far. And it's the same. You know, you try what is it, then you become distracted, thinking of this or that. Then you come back to what is this, and you come back again to the whole experience. So it has the same anchoring power. But then what is important with this practice is that this is not a mantra, this is not a special word. So you're not sitting there, what is this, what is this, what is this? You're not, it's not like a prayer, it's not like a reciting. So it's really a question. What is this? And it's really to develop in the whole body and mind a sensation of questioning. So sometimes people ask, but what is the most important part of the question? Should I put emphasis on what is this? Or should I say, what is this? Or should I say, what is this? And actually, the most important part of the question is a question mark. That's what is important. So we're trying, in a way, to become a question mark, but a stable, kind, steady, balanced question mark. Because sometimes when we ask questions, we get lost in questions. And then we get lost. When here, actually, the question has a function of stabilizing us and at the same time opening us to what is this? So that we can be more in all the conditions that arise at any given moment, without grasping, without rejecting, without defining anything. So then, it's kind of, at the beginning you can use a word as an anchor, and after, what is more important is more like you say the word, what is this, and there is a little of that sensation of questioning, you stay with that, and when that goes, you can ask the question again. So you don't have to ask the question so often. It just depends if you are anchored or not and how much you need to use it. So you can do it just by itself. So you could just do the questioning by itself, like they do in Korea. And then there, they have like two main methods. One method is actually to do it with the breath. So you combine the two. You breathe in, and as you breathe out, what is this? You breathe in, as you breathe out, what is this? At the beginning, it might help one to anchor. But then you can move to just asking the question, staying with the sensation, and then when it's gone, then you can bring the question again. So that's one way one can do it, if it suits one. But also personally, I feel that we can use it in a different way. We can use it in more like a kind of a mindfulness way, so that you could just do the mindfulness of the breath. And then just time to time, drop the question in. What is this? And then come back to the breath. Or you could do the mindfulness of the body, just being aware of the body, aware of the sensation, and then time to time you could just drop, what is this? And then back to the mindfulness of the body. Or you could do the mindfulness of the sound. And the same, time to time you can drop the question. So in a way, I feel that it kind of be done in a way which complement what we've been doing up to now. And kind of trying to bring a certain level of openness, flexibility in the practice. Then, like any other method, this method does not work for everybody. I think this is a very important point. So what I would suggest is that you try it out, and some of you might think, oh, that's a wonderful method. I really like this. And then some other people, they sit there, what is this, what is that? Why am I asking this stupid question? You don't have to. This is, for me, a retreat is really an exploration. What is it that works? What is it that resonates? What is it that can bring a certain angle, a certain depth to my practice? And so in a way, I think what is important on a retreat is that, yes, you have the teacher who gave certain suggestion, recommendation, but you are the one who is practicing. And so in a way, each of us must become our own teacher, because only we can know what is the effect or not, or if it makes sense to us or not. And then sometime with this practice, when you do the what is this, because it helps us to be a little bit with uncertainty. And then if people are a little anxious, they might not be so comfortable with that experience of being with uncertainty. So then if there is a little of anxiety, thing of that nature, I would say don't do it too much, the questioning. Just do more the mindfulness of the breath or the body of the sound, and just once or twice in a sitting or in a walking, just drop the question once and don't do it too much. Just notice, is it helpful in terms of being with uncertainty or not? So in a way to see for each of us, the question might resonate in a different way. And the one thing to really be careful about, and this is a little the same problem with the phrases of loving kindness, compassion, etc., is that we are different in terms of the way we see the world, the way we perceive, the way we express ourselves. So then some people, as soon as word comes in, actually it leads to proliferation. It's kind of like triggering lots of thought. And so sometimes then it's better not to have phrases, it's not better not to use a question and use something which is more, in a way, experiential in terms of sensation. And then some people, they can use word and it's more like it doesn't lead to think, but it leads more as an orientation toward a certain resonance, a certain evocation. So I think we also have to see how these things strike us. And because we are different, they might strike us in a different way. And then finally, in terms of the wording of the question, so what I offer is, what is this? And I would suggest you do it in Finnish, in the best formulation that works for you. And that also, of course, you can change the word. The, what is this word? They're not special in a way. So if you, in order to develop a sensation of questioning, if you want to use other things, that's fine too. As long as it doesn't lead to proliferation, doesn't lead to thought upon thought. Sometimes people prefer to just use one word, what? And just being with what? And other people have found other things useful. So then again, this is for you to find out. Does it resonate or not? And is it a good way for me to try to practice? Or am I more confident with what I have done before, which is fine too? So that's what I would suggest for today. And one thing to really see, what is very important, is when you ask a question, try not to do it in a forceful, repetitive way. Kind of like, what is this? What is this? That's really not helpful. And so what we're really trying to do with the question is not to ask the question with the head, but actually try to bring the question down into the belly and nearly asking the question from the belly. So in a way, asking the question with the body, but in a lower part of the body. We have to be very careful with that. So is this relatively clear? Shall we try it out? So if we stand and stretch a little,